With Jimmy Hyams, I'm John Wilkerson, and it's always fun when we get to welcome back to the show Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com for his weekly visit, and we invite you, of course, to join the conversation. His appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screen. From design to installation, the team at Diversified has you covered. You can view their portfolio online at sunandscreen.com. Brent, so much going on. But why don't we go ahead and just start with baseball? What has it been like to watch this team start 9-0 and just not be distracted one bit by being the number one team in the country?
They're stupid good right now. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I mean, you know, it's one of those deals where no distraction, which tells you about their maturity for sure. You know, the crazy thing about the last, really, the nine SEC wins is – Saturday in Nashville, maybe that one was, quote, a little interesting. You never felt like Tennessee was in trouble. So out of the nine, you've had one game where it was kind of dicey. And that was...
I'd go Sunday at Ole Miss.
That's what I'm saying. That's the only one.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe Saturday night in Nashville, if you want, because you got to get the big double play in the ninth.
Right.
You know, but the only one that was really dicey was Ole Miss on Sunday. The rest of them, you've been in control from the second inning on, which is just, in college baseball, it's crazy to think about. It can't go all the way through seven more weekend series like that. But, man, I mean, this team can hit it. This team can pitch it really, really well. And I thought they filled, with the exception of maybe one error in Nashville, which was not a really good play, I thought they fielded the ball really well in Nashville, much better against Vanderbilt than they did against Ole Miss. And if that can continue and you keep throwing strikes, it's going to be fun to watch, that's for sure.
Yeah, continues to be. And
here's my question to you, but before we get into other stuff, where do we think, I mean, Arkansas is good, right?
Right.
Okay. Where do we think they're, and Tennessee's really good, okay? Those two, to me, are clearly the two best teams in the league. Is the rest of the league down, or are they just beating the crap out of each other?
That's a really good question, because Florida was picked second in the East. They got swept by Georgia last week. You have seen the separation. The only one right now, I mean, Georgia is 6-3, and after they, let's see, they've lost a series in Lexington. So you wipe out a team that was picked ahead of you in the standings, and then you lose a series to a team that you were expected to finish in front of. So I think it is kind of like exactly what you're talking about, that right now you've got a lot of teams that you can, that it wouldn't be a surprise. You just kind of toss the coin as to who gets two out of three on that particular weekend.
Right, which to me says that the league is still good and still strong with two elite teams, and then everybody else is just going to kind of beat each other up. I mean, to me the difference, and I haven't looked at Arkansas specifically to know how great their pitching staff is. I know they're hitting the ball really well and scoring a lot of runs, which is what they do. But the teams below those two teams, if you can really push the Friday night starter and get to the pen, then you got some issues. The thing about Tennessee is the bullpen's not a factor. I mean, it is a factor, but nobody's getting taxed that way because of the length that the starters are lasting to this point, you know, each and every night that they go out and start. I mean, look, when you can bring Kirby Connell in and tell him, I need an out, and you can go sit down. And he pitched three pitches, and you go sit down. It tells you you're pretty good in the bullpen.
Yeah, not to mention that was against – it was lefty-lefty with Bradfield, the kid that leads the SEC in stolen bases.
It was the absolute perfect move by Tony Vitello, but it was comical to watch it on TV when he went out there to take him out. It was like, yeah, go sit down. You're done. You got three pitches. I'm done with you tonight. You can sit down. I might need you the rest of the weekend. I mean, but when you can do that, you got a lot of options, and you got a lot of versatility because your starters are getting you so deep in the game. Nobody's having to eat innings for you because of what those starters have been able to do.
Yeah, and Arkansas has been able to do what it's done in getting to the top spot in the West without their best pitcher. They lost him before the season started, and he will not be a part of the team, and that's a shame. He was going to be their Friday starter. So, but what Tennessee has is a wealth of riches. And, I mean, when you have last year a freshman All-American from your College World Series team that starts on Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
you're in good shape.
I mean, think about this, Jimmy. I mean, you're sitting here, and the three starters you have on the weekend weren't on your team last year.
Yeah.
They weren't here.
Well, they're only 17-0 so far.
And they're arguably the three best starting pitchers in the SEC, and they weren't on your roster. And the Saturday starter was 4-3 at Georgia Southern. Huh? I mean, he didn't go into the transfer portal because he was a great pitcher on a bad team. I mean, it wasn't like he was Steph Curry leaving Davidson to go to a Power 5 school or something like that. He was 4-3.
Made his debut against Blake right. Tidwell.
And now he's averaging 7 innings an outing on Saturday in the SEC.
Yeah.
And just continues to throw low volume in terms of pitch numbers to get you deep in games and cruising right along. I don't know. I've never seen anything like it. It's fun to watch.
It is fun.
I bet hated by everybody else in the league. I can promise you that. Nobody else in the SEC is having any fun watching it right now.
Let's get a call from Steve. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Steve.
Hey, fellas.
Hey.
Hey. Brent, who if you were the offensive line coach, who would you be excited about right now if anybody in the offensive line for Tennessee?
Well, they're bringing 4 starters back, so I like those 4 guys.
Okay.
I mean, you got 4 guys who started 12 games for you last year.
Right.
Those would be the ones that maybe they didn't start all 12. I think it's pretty close. But those would be the ones where I would feel very comfortable right now. Now, you got to find a tackle. You got to find a left tackle, or you got to find a right tackle if you move Darnell Wright back to left tackle. So you have to find one tackle. We'll see if they can find that. But I think you feel pretty comfortable with Cooper Mays and the way that he can manage this offense from a pacing standpoint. I think Jerome Carvin is undervalued by a lot of people. I think he's a steady, really good player. Spraggins, I expect, will be better. I don't know that he'll ever be a great player. There's some physical things. He's not the longest arm guy. I mean, that type of thing. But he's a quality guy in the SEC who's been effective. I think the bigger question is, where are you in finding that left tackle, and then where are you 6 through 8 in terms of depth? Because they were, I mean, other than the Cade Mays injury, they were, they were okay last year injury front. I know Ollie Lane stepped in and played some and serviced Tennessee well in 2 or 3 ball games while they were dealing with the Cooper Mays ankle injury. But really, you only felt great about them, Jimmy. 6, 7 was kind of pushing. You could survive with your 7th guy. Can they develop some depth with those guys? I think is the big question. And I don't know where that depth's going to come from, because I don't know that William Parker or some of those young guys who haven't played yet, I just don't know how big of a factor they're ultimately going to end up being for Tennessee. You know, their James Robinson kid from Alabama's not really pushed for anything. So where do they come with that depth in that group would be my concern.
Okay. Yeah, I'd agree with that. I want to change something I said a week or two ago. I thought we probably signed about 5 or 6 in state in this class. I'm going to say as many as 8. That's what I'm going to say in the state.
I'm counting in my head. Go ahead. continue on. I think maybe 6. I would be closer to 6 than I would be 8 at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay, then. Let me ask you, somebody I don't hear people about, I've asked you about several times, the Eason kid. Do you think he has any kind of future up there on the defensive line?
I think he's got a chance to be an inside guy. He's getting a ton of reps, and I think he's getting better. I think he's a guy who can get in the rotation and give you some snaps this year. You know, that's a big-time adjustment to go from being a linebacker all of your life playing in open space to, hey, line across straight from a center or straight from a guard. And I think that adjustment period has been challenging for him. I think he's embracing it now more than he ever has. And so I think he's a guy who's getting better. He's just got to learn to play more physical. It's really one of the remarkable things about a guy like Billy Ratliff, Jimmy, and it alludes to his quickness. His quickness was so good when they moved him down there that he could get away with not getting tied up necessarily and getting road graded because of his quickness. Bryson doesn't have that kind of quickness when he was a linebacker. I don't think it translates to that quickness and that Billy Ratliff. I mean, Billy Ratliff was, if he could have stayed healthy, would have gone down here as one of the better players to have played on the defensive line at Tennessee, and I think he would have had a chance to play a good while in the NFL. He was just beset by those injuries that he had when he was here. It's just a hard move from linebacker to defensive tackle. It takes some time, and it's still an adjustment period for him, for Eason.
Okay. Well, okay then. I've got several other questions I would ask, but I'm sure y'all want to get somebody else. So
write them down for next week, Steve.
I'm not a baseball fan, but I'm thrilled about our baseball team. I'm a fan enough of UT that I'm thrilled about that right now. And it's interesting to me, too. Our coach, you know, we hire these coaches for years. They have a real good reputation with a lot of pulling. They don't do that well. And, you know, how it goes. They get this dude in here, and they're just tearing it up. And I think we talked about one time a while back about baseball, where it's more mental than it was physical in a way. And, you know, so psychological maybe. But enough of that. Well, okay, fellas.
Right,
I'm excited about spring practice so far. I think some things are looking really good.
That they are. Steve, we always appreciate it. We'll get a break. More with Brent Hubbs coming up. To join the conversation, 865-656-9900, 865-656-9900.
Brent, Tennessee's got the all-vol weekend. They've got the scrimmage on Saturday at 1 o'clock. It'll be on the practice field. Will this be a big weekend for recruiting?
Yeah. Yeah, a big weekend. Out of North Carolina, Rico Walker will be here. In state, Nathan Robinson will be here. We'll see if Caleb Herring comes in or not. He may or may not come in this weekend. Aiden Bussell will be back in from in state. But the story of the headliners of this weekend is Nico will be back in, and he will be entertaining two very high profile receivers that Tennessee's involved with. Carnell Tate, who's originally from Chicago. Most people think Ohio State's the leader there. He goes to IMG Academy. He will be in this weekend. Kyler Casper from out in Arizona will be in this weekend. Both those guys are coming in on official visits this weekend. So they'll be here the whole weekend, not just here for a day, coming in with their families. And we'll be here with Nico and his family. So that's the big headliners for this weekend. There'll be other guys. Sylvester Smith from down in Alabama is a defensive prospect who I think is going to end up coming in this weekend as well. They had Tony Rojas in earlier this week for a couple of days on an unofficial visit. He's from Virginia, defensive linebacker. Some people think he could play running back as well. We'll see. I think Tennessee likes him probably more on defense than they do on offense, but I think they would play him, you know, be fine with him either place. I think Tennessee made a really good impression. It's his first trip down here. I think Tennessee's put themselves, they'll get an official visit back from him later this summer before he makes a decision in August. But that's a guy who's climbing a lot of people's boards and is someone that's been high, that Tennessee's had pretty high on their board since they evaluated him a few weeks ago. And I would look for him to come back. It was a really good couple-day visit for him here in town. Yeah, I think he enjoyed the one-on-one time because he was the one big name here that was here multiple days. So I think he got a lot of meeting time, a lot of time with the coaches one-on-one. I think that was something he was looking for, as opposed to going to a junior day, Jimmy, where, you know, there's 100 kids in there and you kind of get lost in the shuffle a little bit. He got a lot of one-on-one time, and I think that was important.
Tennessee's made a lot of coaches and players available this week. Two defensive backs, Jalen McCollum, Trayvon Flowers, talking about working at both safeties and at the star position. How important do you think it is for Tennessee to fill that void left by Theo Jackson at the nickel spot?
Well, I think it's tremendous. And the question is, who is it? You know, is that Brandon Turnage, or does Turnage have to play corner for this team? Can Flowers really play there? You know, McCullough's interesting. He weighs about what he weighed a year ago, but he's almost dropped almost 8 to 10% body fat down there. He's really gotten a lot leaner by design to try to improve his speed a little bit. I don't know that translates into him playing the star position after playing his entire career at safety. But they've got to find that answer somewhere, whether that's Flowers, Turnage, a transfer, Christian Charles. I don't know where the answer comes from there, but they've got to find that answer because, as we all know in football, that nickel position makes a lot of plays and is asked to make a lot of plays and is put in position to make a lot of plays. Theo Jackson had a great year in that position a year ago. Justin Coleman under Willie Martinez really thrived when he moved into that position late in his career. We saw what Turnage did in his one start at that position. He got all SEC honors there. So the position allows you to make a lot of plays, but you've got to be able to do both things. You've got to be able to play downhill and run support really well, and you got to cover. That's where they're going to miss Theo Jackson, is they didn't have to protect Theo. You know, sometimes you get that guy, well, you got to protect him in coverage because you really need him downhill in the box in your run game, or you got to try to help him in the run game because you really need him in coverage. The thing Theo Jackson showed last year that he could do is he could handle both of those really well. really tickled with what he did in pro day in terms of how well he ran. Don't know if that puts him in a draftable position, but it's going to open up a lot of people's eyes to give him a better shot in camp, because I think the guy can play football. I think he's got a lot of football smarts about him. There'll be concerns about his speed, but at least he's going to get a better shot because of what he ran in the 40.
Pass rushers, I see Byron Young. I see probably Roman Harrison. I see Tyler Barron. Anybody else that you think could fill the bill of being a good pass rusher?
Yeah, I just don't think they're here yet. You know,
James Pierce,
you know, I think if he can get here, I think that's a guy that in situations, you know, you want to try to get him involved and get him going there. So I think your help's coming from there. I think Tyler Barron's going to play on the other side, you know, and be more of a strong side. And he'll be able to rush the passer. But instead of competing for snaps with Byron Young right there, I think he's going to be on the other side, and your top two are going to be Young and Roman Harrison in terms of that, quote, speed, weak side, edge rusher, Leo, whatever we're calling that guy these days. I'm not sure what we call that anymore. But that guy, as opposed to the strong side, I think the top two guys there are going to be Byron Young and Roman Harrison. And I think Harrison's the guy that continues to get better, Jimmy. I mean, he's starting to figure out how to play on an edge a little bit and play with some angles, which I think was a challenge for him, moving from nose tackle outside where he played in high school. Byron Young physically looks better than he looked a year ago, and I thought he looked good a year ago. The big thing for me about Byron, and you don't get to see a lot of practice, but talking to people over there, his understanding of the game. He played a lot off athletic ability a year ago. I think now he's really starting to understand and recognize formations, recognize, hey, if this guy does this with his feet, here's what he's trying to do to me. You know, and I think that's only going to make him a better football player in year two under Rodney Garner. So really excited about where he's at and where he's going to be moving forward. I think he's going to have – he had a nice year last year, but I think he's poised to have a much bigger year this year if he can stay healthy.
There has been the opportunity to talk with at least one of the newcomers, and I'm wondering what have you been able to discern, or has there been much said about there being so many early enrollees and how they have handled this first opportunity?
Well, I mean, I think that I sat down with Josh Heupel back in February before we got to spring, and we're in, for a podcast deal I did with him. And Josh Heupel doesn't gush a whole lot about a lot of anything. But even then, he was talking about how mature that those guys were, how they went about their business from day one, off the field, on the field, and how they had become a part of the team. They were not afraid to stand up and talk in front of the team. A lot of maturity out of that group, and I think that's translated on the field. Look, their heads are swimming. It's going a million miles an hour, as we all know. But as you go through spring and you get over half under your belt, stuff starts to slow down a little bit. We heard today from everybody who spoke about Squirrel White and his speed, you know. That speed shows up more and more as you know what to do. It's one thing to be fast and not know what to do, but when you know what to do and you're fast, you look even faster, right? So I think some of those guys are settling in. I think those young receivers are going to have a chance to help, you know, this team. We'll see about those interior defensive linemen. That's hard. I think there's a lot of ability out of Jordan Phillips and Tyree West. Hard for me to say that they're going to play right out of the gate. I think Herring's going to help for sure on special teams. We'll see where he gets into from a linebacker standpoint, but I think he's definitely going to help there. The one they probably need to have help is not a first-year or high school kid. Desmond Williams has got to continue to come on. Mm-hmm. He's got to continue because they need help at that cornerback position. But I think all 14 of those guys have certainly benefited from being here. And, you know, I think it's going to help them help this team immediately, and I think it's important that they were here to help build some depth on this team. I don't know that any of them are going to be starters, but I think you're going to see some guys make some contributions in a variety of ways out of that newcomer group just in this first year.
If you have a question or comment for Brent, 865-656-9900. That's 865-656-9900. Toll free outside the area, 866-656-9900. Brent's appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screen. From design to installation, the team at Diversified has you covered. You can view their portfolio online at sunandscreen.com. To join us, 865-656-9900, 865-656-9900. 9900. And Brent, I saw where you shared the memory on Facebook, but the fact that today is the first day at the Masters, You got to go there a few years ago, as you said, bucket list item, through and through. What goes through your mind when you watch, knowing that you've walked exactly where everybody wants to have walked at least once?
Well, you just have a greater appreciation for the quality of the golf shot. You just have a greater appreciation for the challenges that that golf course presents from the hills and just the terrain of where. When I went there, I may have said this story, but when I went there, and Austin and I went, Austin took me. So he was like, when we got there, he was like, look, I've been here a million times. So, like, where do you want to go? And he goes, do you just want to walk from the first tee and just walk it at 18? Or I said, I've got to see where Phil hit it out of the pine straw, right? I got to see where Bubba hit it. I said, but the first place I want to go is I want to go to 9 because I've never completely rationalized how Greg Norman could leave that ball there and end up where he did and in his run for the Masters.
Right.
Because he was in total control of the golf tournament till that golf shot.
96.
Yeah. And so when you go and you see that, you went, oh, okay. Yeah. You can't leave it there. Like, it, I mean, it's jailed. And so you can't really get a great appreciation for that on TV. But I wanted to see that. And that was an eye-opener for me. So now when you watch it on TV and you see where somebody's at, oh, wow, that's a lot harder shot than you thought. Or no wonder they want it on the right side versus the left side. They're just, you get a much better perspective of it. So it's a blast. Anybody who has an opportunity to go, whether you love golf or you don't love golf, if you ever get the opportunity, you should go just to see it and experience it. It's fabulous. And the people happiest right now are the fine folks at ESPN and hopefully the fine folks at CBS, because Tiger Woods going to make the cut, which is going to give them a storyline for the rest of the weekend. Because no offense to the rest of the golfers of the world, unless you're a golf fanatic, the appeal for this weekend without Tiger Woods was the golf course. And now you got a storyline to go with the golf course if Tiger Woods makes it to the weekend.
If you got the chance to go back, yes. Is there something that you would want to see that you perhaps didn't get to the first time?
We never went to the front of the clubhouse. I never went around to the front. I know you can't go in, but I never went around to the front to see that part of it. I think if I went back, I would probably want to go somewhere in Amen Corner and just sit for a while. And if I went back, I would like to go back for a tournament round, I think, instead of a practice round. I enjoy the practice round because there's not as many people, and you can walk freely and get to see more things. Having seen it, I think I would like to go back and watch a Thursday, Friday, or a weekend, if I could, and just post a chair somewhere and sit for a while and watch. But if the opportunity came back to watch to go see a practice round, I'd get in the car, go back down there and see it again. No question. I mean, it's better than what you imagine that it's going to be on TV, in my opinion. I just think that it's great. It's heaven of a golf course.
I've had it surrounded from both the South Carolina side and the Georgia side, but never gotten all the way there.
What was your experience with it, Jimmy? You've been there multiple times.
I was there in 96. That was the first time I ever covered the tournament. And that's when Greg Norman had the six-shot lead and blew it and fouled it. He shot 78. That's awful. Faldo had a good round. But that was a great – what I also remember was that Wednesday when I got down there, I was down there covering with John Adams with the New Sentinel, and I went out to walk the course, and I ran into a worker, a groundskeeper at the Masters. And he said, well, what are you doing? I said, well, I've never been here before. He said, well, what do you want to see? So he took me over to where Gene Sarazen made the double eagle. Wow. He showed me some different places on the course. We went to Amen Corner, and I walked the course with him, and I really appreciated it. You don't, on TV, as you're alluding to, get an understanding of some of the uphill shots, the downhill shots, just the undulation that you have on that course, how precise you have to be with your irons to keep it on the green, where you need to hit it, where you don't need to hit it. And so I covered it once. That was the only year I covered it. I then made the brilliant prediction. I saw Tiger Woods play in 96 as an amateur. He missed the cut, and I said, he's not going to win this thing in 97. So he won it by 12. I then went two other times to watch. Phil Mickelson, actually, it was Mickelson's first win.
Was it?
But it's Sunday's harder because it's like, who do you follow?
Right. You just got to set a chair and sit somewhere.
There's so much action going on all over the place.
Yeah.
And so that it's almost better to watch it on TV on Sunday.
Yeah.
But I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it's a great place. And uh, I I haven't been there in about, it's been a while, 2006 or something like that was the last time.
Yeah, I think the only reason I would say I want to be there on a weekend is I'd like to be down in the corner and hear the roar. You know, just for the, what does that really feel like and sound like in there? You know, on a practice round, you don't get that feeling, but you get to see the golf course, which you can't see on the weekend.
Interesting you mentioned the roar, because when I was there, there would be a roar, and then there was a Tiger roar. You could tell the difference in how loud it was, and you knew that Tiger Woods had done something.
Yeah.
Because there were extra decibels whenever the patrons were cheering. So, wanted to ask you basketball with Rick Barnes. They've lost another player. It's not official. But they've got another player that's going to transfer going to East Carolina. That would be the third player they've lost. What are your thoughts on B.J. Edwards replacing Kennedy Chandler and how they need to fill the other two gaps on the roster?
Well, I mean, I think that they're certainly going to look for a big man of some kind and then a guard. I think a scoring guard, a guy that that can do something off the bounce, that can get you a bucket.
Create his own shot.
When the shot clock's going down, you don't have a whole lot going on. I think somebody who can get you a bucket some way, somehow. Is that the Murray kid that was going to LSU, mm-hmm. maybe? You know, I don't know exactly who that would be. There's the kid at Indiana State that did not play this year, who's originally from Tennessee. That Tennessee might be involved there, might not be. I think Murray's kind of – the Murray kid's where it starts right now. So that, and then I think, you know, another post player, if you can, you know, but if you can get the I think you have to get a scoring guard, Jimmy, and then maybe you take the next best available,
Could be a Julian Phillips if you can get him.
Right. Maybe it's next best available, not necessarily a big man, but next best available after you get a guy who can score facing the basket, you know, that can beat you off the dribble, that can find a way to get you a tough basket or get you a basket when you don't have a whole lot going on. I think that's the one thing, you know, that this team's going to need when you look at them moving forward. I like Ziegler, but I don't know that Ziegler can do what Chandler did in that stretch against Michigan until Michigan called timeout and said, you're not going to do that anymore to us. When they took that away, who's the guy on this roster right now that you say, hey, going to beat you off the dribble and get a floater in the lane or get you a 10-foot jump shot? You know, Josiah showed that at some, but not nearly enough. So who can be that on this team? I think they've got to have that piece of the puzzle moving forward.
I really like B.J. Edwards, and in part, and I've seen him play a few times, but in part, the way he played against Jaden Springer and the way he played against Kennedy Chandler, that tells me that guy's a really good competitor.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that culturally, he's going to fit in really well with this program because of that. I think he loves to work. I know some people that have known him through the AAU circles, and they said you would be dumbfounded at the number of shots he gets up on a weekend. He might play on a Friday night, but there's a couple places in Knoxville you'll find him every Saturday morning, Sunday, shooting, getting the ball up, getting a bunch of shots in. Guy's a grinder. He really puts in a lot of time and a lot of work on his game, which is going to be a perfect fit for Rick Barnes and his staff.
If you have a question or comment for Brent, 865-656-9900. That's 865-656-9900. Outside the area, toll free, 866-656-9900. Final segment for us today with Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com. Let's check in with Larry. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Larry.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Good, thank you. Brent, I wonder what the scuttlebutt is now on Tyreek Key. From Indiana State, that's in the portal.
Yeah,
I know Tennessee has been talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
But he's from my little home.
Yeah,
Tennessee.
I think Tennessee had interest in him when he went in the portal a year ago, and they had interest in him when he came out of high school. To a degree. So he decided to go back to Indiana State, but didn't play because he had his shoulder repaired. Now he's back in the portal. I think Tennessee definitely has interest there. Is he at the top of the board? I can't say that, but definitely there's conversations, and I think those conversations are going to continue to go, and it would not surprise me at all to see Key visit here at some point.
Well, I think they had a Rick Barnes lookout alert in Clay County yesterday.
I'll say this for Rick. Rick's been on the road recruiting a lot this spring. He's been up in Pennsylvania seeing some high school kids. He's done some stuff, I think, with some portal kids and things. He he's been pretty active on the road this spring, out seeing some guys. And again, that's just the way the sport's changing. You gotta be in there with some of those guys. You can't wait till an AAU tournament for some high school kids. And then from a portal standpoint, particularly when you're as guarded and protective of their culture the way Rick Barnes is, he's not just going to take a flyer on a transfer kid. He's got to find out exactly why that kid's transferring, particularly if he doesn't have a relationship with him, from a previous, recruiting him in the past. He's going to do his due diligence on all those kids and make sure he knows why, which is why I think you're seeing him out and about more on the recruiting trail this spring than you've seen in previous years.
Well, he's a fantastic man, and he is has a lot of state records here in Tennessee from his senior year, and he's last time he played Purdue, they played them every year. He had 28 against them, and he can shoot the lights out of it. I just wish he could get a shot.
Well, I certainly wouldn't rule it out. We'll see what happens, as you balance all these things with your limited numbers and all the people that you got in the portal and different options out there for sure. But I definitely would not rule that possibility out, because, again, I think finding a guy who can score, not just a spot-up shooter, but a guy who can score from that perimeter, I think is important for this team moving forward when you look at remaking this roster.
Right. Okay, I just thought maybe you need something a little more current.
Now, conversations, he's not been on campus yet. I don't think conversations are going to die down. I think they're going to continue to visit with him.
Well, great.
His three-year average at Indiana State, 17.2 points a game.
Mm-hmm. Good player.
Wow.
Yeah, good score. Again, a guy who can put the ball in the basket.
47% from the field, 5.3 rebounds a game.
Yeah. And again, when you look at it, it's not a guy who stands out on the perimeter and shoots, 8 three-pointers a game, or you got to run him off double screens to get him open. At Indiana State, he's been able to put the ball on the floor and create some opportunities for himself to score. So I think that's something this program should be looking for and is looking for.
Larry, we sure do appreciate the call. Have a great night. Brent, we've asked a lot about how different is it for the position coaches, how different is it for Josh Heupel in terms of this spring compared to what was going on this time last year when everybody's trying to sip water from a fire hose. What do you think this spring is like for Hendon Hooker? How different do you think it is for him this April compared to what it was last year when he wasn't expected to be the starter because everything was pushing in a different direction and Joe Milton?
Well, what's comical is I went back and looked at some stuff I wrote last year about Hendon Hooker, and my criticism or knock on Hendon Hooker was that he wouldn't throw the ball down the field, that he didn't drive the football, that he was the guy that everything was a dump down, everything was a check down, that every time we got to see him in any kind of work, it was he had checked the ball down. And that was kind of the reputation for him. And then you went and looked at some Virginia Tech stats, and he threw it a little further down the field than you probably gave him credit for. And then he goes out this past year, and obviously they throw it down the field in this offense, which is what they do. But I remember a quote from Joey Halsley, and I think it was in spring. It might have been in fall, early in fall camp. But he talked about his message to all the quarterbacks was, let it rip. Let it rip. If you make a mistake, it's okay, but you can't win this job being conservative. Let it rip. And obviously Hendon, when he got the opportunity in the regular season, let it rip. I don't think he did that last spring. Mm-hmm. I think where Hendon's at now is he's got complete confidence in the offense, complete confidence in himself. And I thought he made some interesting comments today about manipulating defenses now with his eyes, pre-snap, and some different things he's doing. It feels like a guy who's really growing on the mental side of things of being a quarterback now that he's played some, played a good bit. I know he played at Virginia Tech, but playing as in complete control, this is kind of your offense. What do you like? What do you want to run? We're going to build some things around that. And because of that, it feels like he's taken his game to a different place from a mental standpoint. Which I thought was really interesting and pretty fascinating with some of his comments today when he made the media. It's got to be vastly different for him now compared to, he go into a practice, he didn't know if he was going to get second team reps, first team reps, who he was splitting them with, if he was getting 50%, 30%. Now he goes in, nobody looks around and says, who's up next? It's like, I'm starting quarterback. When I get done, then the next guy can come in and throw some, but I'm going to get all the reps I need for myself first and foremost. That's a whole different mentality than you had a year ago.
Boy, it sure is. And then also, Monday was the last episode this season for Vol Calls. Since there's no spring game, there's nothing to get past and then kind of recap, which is usually when the curtain falls. But how much fun was this season?
Well, it was fun because football, I mean, football started scoring, you know, and there were conversations to have in football. Rick Barnes is always fun, and Kelly Harper is a delight to talk to and to interview and talk basketball with. So it was a lot of fun. You know, I've been a part of that show since 1994, which just tells you I'm really, really old. You know, and I keep looking at recruits. There's a story came across our Rivals ticker a couple of days ago. Jai Eugene has a son who's being recruited. And Jai Eugene was a cornerback from down Louisiana that Tennessee tried to recruit. And every time you see one of those, you go, man, I'm just getting really old really fast. So the bottom line with Vol Calls is I've been doing it probably way too long. There's probably a lot of people like to hear somebody else on that thing talking for an hour, but they keep letting me come back, and I appreciate it. So it was, you know, it was a good year because Tennessee's had a good year. They've had a good year in a lot of sports. I think they're right on the cusp of the top 10 in the Learfield, you know, All Sports Cup.
11th.
Been a long time since Tennessee's been there. A long, long time, which says a lot about the health of the athletics department. Also tells you Danny White inherited, outside of football, a pretty stable athletic department. Financially, not so much, but from a competition standpoint, pretty good outside of football. Now he's trying to fix football, obviously.
What will folks find at VolQuest.com these days?
Well, we got the War Room tomorrow. Plenty of coverage of recruiting coming up over the weekend with everybody in town. Coverage of the scrimmage on Saturday. Ben McKee will have you covered with plenty of Tennessee baseball stuff coming up throughout the weekend. And we introduced something this past Monday we're going to do every Monday through the regular season. We call it Extra Innings. And Ben is sitting down for 10, 15 minutes with a baseball player. And it's not just about what happened that – it's not about what happened that week. It's about – that guy's story. Everybody's got a great story to tell, whatever sport it is. Baseball kids' stories are fun. And so we introduced the first one of those this past Monday. We'll have another episode of that coming up this coming Monday.
All right. Look forward to that. Brent, always appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, guys.
That's Brent Hubbs of VolQuest.com. His appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screen. From design to installation, the team at Diversified has you covered. View their portfolio online at sunandscreen.com.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.